thirds of the amount remaining on his contract over 6 years. Thunderstorms likely today in Charlotte, a high of 87, 72 degrees right now. May see some thunderstorms tonight, a low around 70. Tomorrow, thunderstorms likely again, highs in the upper 80s. This is WFAE News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Emma, email marketing and automation software featuring specialized editions for organizations like universities, agencies, and franchises. Emma, email marketing for the modern brand. Learn more at myemma.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. I never went to summer camp and never particularly wanted to go. Perhaps that was because about the time I was the right age to be packed off to that summer retreat for kids and their parents, comedian Alan Sherman released his album, My Son the Folk Singer, which contained a song about a boy writing his parents about Camp Granada, where he was miserable due to the constant pain, ptomaine poisoning from the food, alligators in the lake. Well, not a pretty picture.
Take me home, oh mother, father, take me home. I hate Granada, don't leave me out in the forest where I might get eaten by a bear. Take me home, I promise I will not make noise or mess the house with other boys. Oh, please don't make me stay. I've been here one whole day.
Of course, I disregarded the next verse in which the sun comes out and he completely changes his mind. The misgivings Sherman sings about in Hello Mudda, Hello Fada hadn't changed much since 1963. Some kids still loathe the idea of going away from their parents for an extended period of time, and some of today's parents worry about it, too. But our guest today suggests you put away those fears. Dr. Michael Thompson is a child psychologist and school consultant and author of several books, including his latest, Homesick and Happy, How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. Them's fighting words, Dr. Thompson. Welcome to the welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Mike. I'm delighted to be back.
And also with us in our studio is Dave Purcell, executive director of the YMCA Camp Harrison near Wilkesboro. He drove down here this morning from that camp, and thank you for being here because I know you guys are feverishly getting ready for the season. What has to happen every year before you get ready for all the kids to come?
Well, it's a year-round process nowadays, putting on summer camp. We have to hire and look for some of the best staff around to be role models to the kids. And so it's a lengthy process, getting on the college campuses, meeting the students and trying to find folks that love to be around children and want to be a part of kids' lives. So we spent a lot of time out recruiting staff, but then also meeting with parents and talking with moms and dads about sending their kids away to summer camp.
And we'll talk more about that as we go through the hour here. Dr. Thompson joined us last year when we did a program about superheroes and their influence on boys and their images of masculinity. And this kind of plays into this a little bit, I think, Doctor. Boys are supposed to be rough and tumble individuals. They're supposed to have an independent streak. They're supposed to like things like camping out and spending time in the woods and doing boy things like canoeing and fishing and hiking and the like. But some just don't like it. And I will bet you that today there are a lot of kids who don't know that they would like it because they spend all of their times with their thumbs working out on these video games indoors. And some kids don't like the idea of being away from mom and dad. How common are these feelings as opposed to the ones that say, I can't wait for camp to start?
Well, here's the problem, Mike. The biggest change in American childhood over the last 20 years has been the loss of neighborhood play. A free, undirected outdoor play. We have a generation of children who no longer view the out of doors as a place for play. And we have a generation of parents who are wildly anxious about their children walking to school or being out away from the house for an hour at a time. You and I used to go out on Saturdays and spend 4, 5, 6 hours away from home. And parents can't tolerate that. Now,
what happened? Let's talk about the parents for a second. What, because they're driving this. What happened?
Well, we have a more anxious group of parents, I think, in part because of cable TV, because of every tragic thing that happens to a child. Every other parent in the country knows it. So that people don't are assessing risk in a bizarre way by thinking their child's going to be snatched from off the street by a pedophile murderer. And, of course, 5 children a week in the United States die in car crashes with their parents at the wheel. But it's not the way parents think, oh, if I drive my child to school, they're safe. If I let them walk, they're in danger. So 30 years ago, 80% of children used to walk to school. And that was learning for them. I mean, I'm competent. I get to walk to school a half mile. I meet friends. I develop skills in getting along with the group. We have playtime away from the house. But it was also learning for the parents, because the parents thought, oh, my child can go out and come back, and they do that every day, and they're good. So we have kids who are not used to being in the outdoors, and we have parents who are not used to being away from their kids. And that's giving us a much more kind of anxious parent-child bond. And so I start my book, Homesick and Happy, off with a chapter that's kind of tough on parents, but it says 8 things you cannot do for your kids, even though you wish you could do. And one is you can't keep them happy. The other is you can't give them self-confidence. But the most obvious one to me is you can't give them independence. By definition, to have an independent child, you need to have them go away from you.
You also say we cannot keep our children perfectly safe, but we can drive them crazy trying.
Oh, yes, and I've seen a lot of it.
Have you noticed this in your camping experience as a director of a camp? Have you noticed this change over time of parents becoming more anxious about this, of kids coming to you either with no outdoor experience or really not understanding or even liking being outside?
What I have found is that a lot of parents have had a perhaps when they were children, a negative experience at camp. Maybe their view of what resident camping is what's based on their experience when they were children. Maybe it was a rough camping situation or a primitive camping. And I think the thing that I'm finding is that parents are pleasantly surprised how camping has changed in the last 15, 20 years, how much safer it is, how much more the camps are spending on safety and risk and finding, you know, good staff and how modern the camps have become in terms of facilities, and bathrooms are in the cabins, and our camp, for example, has air conditioning and all the things that they.
But you know, if you do that, then why leave home? I mean, if you're going to go to the Holiday Inn, or you're going to go to a place that has sure. a beautifully tiled shower yep. and air conditioning and great food with padded chairs, mm-hmm. why go away from home?
Well, mom and dad aren't there. That's the reason.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Are these the things that the parents are demanding, or these are things that kids find more comfortable and therefore it makes it an easier sell?
I think it has made it an easier sell, but also it's made for a more positive experience. I think the parents a lot of times have gone away to camp and they've left maybe they were sick the entire time, or they were uncomfortable the entire time, or perhaps they didn't feel supervised by the staff, because perhaps 25, 30 years ago, the style of camping was there wasn't the counselors living in the cabins or whatever the case may be. And now all of that has changed. And so the kids feel safe, they feel comfortable, and therefore they can experience what camps is all about.
For those kids who fear leaving home, who experience homesickness after a day or two at camp, or even a minute or two at camp, how do you make things better for them? How do you prepare kids for homesickness?
Can I jump in here?
Sure, Michael.
Look, homesickness is almost universal. 97% of kids report some kind of homesickness. The researcher did that research, said he thought it was probably 100%. But 3% of kids just weren't going to acknowledge it under any circumstances. Now, homesickness means you have a home worth being sick about. That is, you have loving parents. You have something to miss. That's what homesickness is. It's a yearning, I wish I were home. But homesickness is also part of growing up. To become an adult, you're going to have to be able to be away from your parents. And so you do that in stages. And for many kids, the camp experience is the first sustained time away from home. And nervous parents think, oh, she's going to miss me so much, he's going to miss me so much. But what they're not factoring in is how strong and competent and successful the child will feel psychologically from having beaten it. So you get 81% of kids who go to camp and have some mild homesickness, which they can get over in 2 or 3 days. And it's unexpected for some of them, and it hurts a bit. About 19% have a significant distress. I mean, really periods of sobbing into their pillow and feeling terrible and wanting to go home and really feeling awful. And they get past it. But what's amazing, and the heroes of my book are the 6% of kids who have unremitting homesickness. That is, it's with them every day. I had a woman in Toronto who said to me, oh, I had a terrible first year at camp. And I said, why? She said, I was so homesick. It was terrible. I knew I had to go back. I said, you went back? And she said, yes, I knew I had to beat that thing.
Hmm.
And I think parents don't give kids credit for their own development. And my book is not actually a camp book, though I think the camp world has been very kind about it. It's a book about child development and the ways in which children define their own developmental tasks and say, oh, this is what I need to do. I need to learn how to be away from home. I need to learn to live in community. I need to make my own friends. I need to master the skills of either learning to swim if I don't know or learning to kayak, which is scary, and do a roll and a wet exit. And I can't do that with my anxious mom standing on the shore saying, are you all right?
How many kids, first-time campers, come to you and exhibit signs of homesickness, and what do you do about it?
Well, it's about 40% of the kids are first-time campers. Out of that 40%, you know, maybe one or two campers in each cabin would be homesick. Homesickness can be somewhat contagious. My friend is missing home, and all of a sudden I start thinking about it. But I think the thing that we do and at many camps do is you hire good counselors that have been campers before and have perhaps had a similar experience, whether they went to camp and were homesickness themselves, or they went away to college and missed home, and being able to relate it back to their personal experience. And I think the thing that we always emphasize is that it's okay to miss mom and dad, or mom or dad, or grandma and grandpa. It's okay. It means you love them. But they would want you to have a good time. They would want you to make friends. They would want you to gain some independence. And we assure them that they will live through this experience, that they can get involved, get busy, that they will have a sense of accomplishment when they finish the weekend.
How many of them leave?
In my 25 years, I've had very few leave, maybe one or two over the course of my 25 years have ever gone home. And usually that's because, and maybe this is the title of a new book, and that's where moms miss the kids more than the campers, and they just can't take it, and they'll show up and pick up their camp.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. we only have a minute left in this segment. Well, what about the parents? Because we have this helicopter generation of parents now who hover around their kids all the time, and it may be harder for them. It may be a relief for the kid to go to camp. So,
I talked to so many camp directors who said they were getting an increasing number of calls from moms who would say about their 9-year-old daughter, she wants to go to camp. She's ready to go. I'm the one who's not ready to have her go.
Yeah.
And there's just an enormous amount of child sickness out there because, instead of homesickness, because the parents aren't used to feeling okay about their children being away from them. This is the downside of a very conscientious parenting generation.
That's Dr. Michael Thompson, child psychologist and author of Homesick and Happy, How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. Dave Purcell is also with us. He's the executive director of YMCA's Camp Harrison, a resident camp near Wilkesboro. And we're coming right back to talk more about camp in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the U.S. National Whitewater Center's 4th of July Festival, featuring live music from Green Sky Bluegrass and Donovan Frankenritter, plus fireworks tomorrow and Saturday. Details at usnwc.org. Tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, we celebrate Independence Day every July, but some Mecklenburgers celebrated their independence from King George earlier in the year. Everyone else celebrates on July 4th, but as legend has it, Mecklenburg declared itself free from tyranny a year earlier on May 20th, 1775. It's a legend because some question the authenticity of the claim. The co-founder of the May 20th Society will lay out the arguments for and against and let you decide when Charlotte Talks, tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, California passes a new law requiring all children enrolled in school to be vaccinated. It's the largest state in the nation to do so. The push to require vaccinations and the tension between public health and personal beliefs.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about summer camp and sending kids off to camp and overcoming fears about going there and homesickness and fears, by the way, on both parts of the equation, the kids and the parents. Dr. Michael Thompson, a child psychologist, author of Homesick and Happy, is with us. Dave Purcell, executive director of the YMCA Camp Harrison, is also here. Let's get back to this helicopter generation of parents who really have... kept kids indoors or have only allowed them on a very short leash. Maybe you can go down the block, but you can't go out of the neighborhood. And I literally, Dr. Thompson mentioned this early in the conversation, that when I was a kid, when he was a kid, I would disappear all day. I mean, literally, my mother would say, get out of the house, 9 o'clock in the morning, go, and be back when I call you for dinner. Or if you get hungry, come home for lunch, you know. That doesn't happen anymore. We also live in an age of cell phones. And I'm hearing this from college professors who are friends of mine, whose parents call their students all the time, and the students call the parents all the time. So even though they're thousands of miles away, they're not. And the parents call the professors because Johnny got a C. Is the same thing happening in camp?
Oh, yeah. We don't allow cell phones at camp.
I was going to ask
you. For the campers. But we try to do some things. You had asked a question before the break about some things that we do to reassure the moms that everything's okay.
Is it just the moms? Or is it
dads? Or the guardian at home, whatever the case may be. We've done some things, and many camps have done this, where we're taking pictures daily and we're posting them online. So it's a window into camp. So every day, moms or dads or guardians can check in and look at all the different things that are happening at camp. They can always call in and talk to their head counselor and find out what's going on. We've instituted a first-time mom call on Tuesday mornings. The head counselors will call the moms and let them know how it's going. They can always send letters. And
camp begins what day? Sunday?
On Sunday, yeah. Okay. So just to check in to let them know what's going on and how it's going. And basically, no news is good news. If we haven't called you before Tuesday or after Tuesday, then everything's fine. They could send letters. They can send emails. We average, for example, 400 to 500 emails a day from parents that are sending emails into their campers and letting them know what's going on. So lots of modernization and tools.
Wait a minute. You get 500 emails a day from parents?
At least. Yeah. At least.
And Mike, I take such a stand against this in my book. I tell parents, and I've told parents when I'm speaking to them as an audience, you're welcome to look at your child's camp pictures, but I want you to know that you're seeing their picture does not add any value to your child's camp experience whatsoever. That this is for you, but it isn't. You're not really participating in camp, and you're not supposed to. I'm against this, parents emailing. I think when kids send off a letter, and it should take 2 or 3 days to get there, and then the parents should write it back. I think the space is part of the experience. I understand the camps are under enormous pressure to provide the kind of instant connection, But from my point of view, camp is the best preparation for college that
now,
there is.
Before we started this program this morning in the studio, Dave, you were telling me that in parts of the country, particularly New England, camp can go on for 8 weeks all summer.
Yeah.
But because of our shortened vacation schedule here in this area, mm-hmm. and there are like 300, 400 camps in this area, mm-hmm. it's one of the overcamped areas of the country. The average camp stay is a week.
Week or 2 weeks.
Now, yeah. when Dr. Thompson was talking about, well, you know, you write a letter and it takes 2 or 3 days to mm-hmm. get home. If you're there for a week, you're home by the time the letter arrives.
So, yeah, Tuesdays are postcard day.
Yes. Yeah, so,
letter home.
What's the point?
Well, your parents write you before you leave.
Yeah.
And so that you have letters coming to you from camp, sure. even in a week-long camp session. And I'm not. I am from the Northeast, but I'm not plumping here for necessarily long camp stays. One of the things I found in interviewing hundreds of kids for Homesick and Happy was how much impact a 1 week experience had, life changing impact.
Hmm.
And I was surprised because I thought I would see much more character development, friendship development. In those kids who went away for a month or even 7 weeks, which is sort of the extreme end of things, and kids just rediscover themselves in a 1 or 2 week thing. And the thing that kids said more to me, more than any other me, is that at camp you can be yourself. And why? What are kids saying as a psychological statement? They're saying, I can't fully own who I am until I'm on my own. That's how I know who I am.
But what's the difference between being around mom and dad and they're dictating your behavior, or at least providing guidance for your behavior, and being at camp where you do have a person like Dave Purcell in your midst, and you have counselors who are a little bit older than you, and they're, what, late teens, early 20s?
Yeah, college students, yeah.
So what's the difference?
Well, I think camp's a real magical place. It's an unconditional love environment where you can be anybody that you want to be at camp. Maybe you are who you really are, and perhaps I don't know if it's the parents so much as it maybe it's their peer groups back at school. They're under pressure to be a certain way, or they might have some self-esteem issues or just they don't feel good about themselves. But when they get to camp, they find that everybody's loved. It's a real we like to say kumbaya kind of.
I was just going to say
where everybody is a friend to each other. It's a real happy place, and I've seen it time and time again where a shy child comes into camp on Sunday, and by the time they leave, they have the confidence to go back and really be who they really are.
You know, you say in your book, Doctor, that camp experience can be liberating and life changing, and we just mentioned school a second ago, and kids are away at school, away from their parents at school every day during the school year, so I'm wondering why they can't be themselves at school, because you say camp is not school. It's different.
Yes, in my chapter, and I use the same term Dave did, I have a chapter called The Magic of Camp. And one of the reasons it's magical is it's not school. It's not about judgment. It's not about evaluation. It's, you know, school is a constant tracking, judging, assessing, remediating, tracking, judging, assessing. Now, they're funny tests at camp. I mean, you got to learn to swim to be down the waterfront. But the people who get you through your tests at camp are not saying what school's saying to you all the time, which is, if you mess up in school, your life is a disaster.
Your permanent record.
Yes, your permanent, exactly so. And camp is not a permanent record. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the tests are kind of silly. I mean, even tent inspections and cabin inspections, they're basically low-stakes testing. But they pull kids together. There's a lot of energy about them. And there's a kind of a victory celebration at the campfire that night when, you know, some cabin's passed its inspection this many times. But it's silly stuff. Doing skits is silly stuff. I found that camps are kind of a constant crucible for creativity and where kids have freer rein than they do in school. Mm. School, look, I've been a school consultant for 30 years. I work in a school myself. I've been in the same school as a supervising psychologist for the last 16 years. And I see a different kid at camp than I see at school. I also see a different kid at camp than I see at town sports. Because at town sports, your dad's standing on the sidelines. And the child on the field is not only having her experience, she's also thinking, how's my dad evaluating my performance? Yeah. When you're at camp, your dad isn't there.
Talk about that for a second, because you see these kids away from their parents,
right.
Dave.
Yep.
And you see a side of them that their parents may never, ever, ever see.
Yeah.
Do you see the change from the time they walk in the door to by Wednesday or Thursday? There's a different kid there?
Oh, yeah. I've seen it time and time again. We had an open house yesterday, and I got a chance to see a camper who's now 15, 16. And the difference in her from the time she first started coming to camp at, say, 10 or 12, she first arrived shy, wouldn't hardly speak to anybody, real conscious about her weight, the way she looked. And just to see her now with her confidence, she's on the move, she's involved at school, she's and sometimes it's something as silly as getting up on stage with other girls and singing a silly song about a green frog, which only happens at camp, but it's that confidence. I've never been up in front of a group of people mm-hmm. before, and everybody's cheering me on, and no one's making fun of me and things like that.
Do you talk to the parents or send notes to the parents, or emails in this case, to sure. the parents about how their child is changing, or do they ask questions about that at some point?
They do. We send home at the end of the session. Our head counselors will prepare a little something that lets the parents know the things they accomplished that week. We let them know how their goals went. We set some goals in the beginning for they help us with that, and we give a little update on how things went.
You're making the job of a college counselor sound like a lot of clerical paperwork and digital emailing to me. I don't think I want to be a counselor anymore.
It's not a lot. Basically, it's on the back of their cabin photos. So
Sarah emails, I am definitely one of those anxious parents. I don't even feel comfortable with my 6-year-old son playing in the backyard without adult supervision. I know I need to get over this because I want my son to be independent and resilient. I talked to my son about being safe, but what other tips do your guests have that I can use to help keep my child safe when he's on his own? Doctor.
Sarah, you have to remember your own childhood. You have to remember back to what are the sweetest times. I've been asking audiences for almost a decade, what was the sweetest moments of your childhood? And 80% of adults say the sweetest moment was when I was away from my parents, they didn't know where I was, and I was doing something challenging, maybe building a dam in a little brook with my friends, and that was the sweetest time. It's probably true for you, Sarah. Mm. So when you want those experiences for your child, you have to mentally coach yourself to get over your anxiety. That means if you can – now, 6 is young, but you have to let your child go for sleepovers with friends. That's practice for him, but it's also practice for you. You have to let him play, and then you have to let him go with a friend and another dad to maybe camp overnight and be away from you out in the wilderness. And then you see how excited he is to come back. And that gives him practice being away, mm-hmm. and it gives you practice.
There's more to Sarah's email, however, so let me finish it.
Although
I didn't enjoy camp the one time I went, I think I would be okay with my son going when he's old enough because the summer camp is still a controlled environment with constant supervision. Correct?
Absolutely.
Question mark. How old is old enough for resident camp? How young is too young? How old is old enough?
Well, I talk to parents about this a lot, and I think it depends on your individual child. And we don't push anybody until they're ready. I think if your child is independent, is used to being away from home a bit or feels comfortable, I always try to encourage the parents to do some test sessions, maybe spend the night with grandma and grandpa or over at a friend's and see how they do. And if they're feeling good about it, then it's a good time for both of you to consider camp. Some campers, that might be 7. Some campers, it might be 9, mm-hmm. 10. It just depends on your individual child.
On Twitter, Little District on Twitter writes, a lot of parents like to do day camps to avoid all this. Now, mm-hmm. is day camp even remotely the same thing?
Well, day camp has a lot of the same qualities as resident camp, for sure.
But you're not away from home overnight. You're not necessarily eating dinner and sitting around the campfire at night with everybody else.
There's some wonderful day camps around that do a great job of teaching independence and a lot of the same qualities that resident camp gives. It is different, and I think you have to look at it that way, that it is a different experience, not to say that it's not positive.
Now, I didn't play all of Alan Sherman's record in the beginning of the program, the Hello Mother, Hello Father, but he does mention a lot of the things that he finds unpleasant, things which, Doctor, you say are meaningfully character building. That is, things like the buggy woods, icy swims, group meals, cabin cleanup. I mean, some kids don't even clean their rooms. So what makes those things character building?
Look, I consult for a camp. It's on a lake in northern Ontario, about 300 miles north of Toronto. And I go up there, and the 11-year-olds, this is a canoeing camp, the 11-year-olds go out and make a 5-day trip away from the base camp, and they come back, and they give a report to the whole camp. They all stand in the line. This is both the boys and the girls. There's a divisions, boys and girls. They stand there with their staff person, and they tell stories. It rained and rained. We couldn't get a fire started. We had to have a cold dinner. We got bitten by mosquitoes. There was a thunderstorm. We were on the lake. We had to race off to get to land because there was lightning. We were all scared. They tell all these scary, terrible stories, and they have the biggest grins on their face, and they are so proud of themselves. What I think the parent who wants to keep their child comfortable all the time forgets is that one of the ways you know you are strong and competent is to get through a period of discomfort and come out the end of it. That's what it means to climb a mountain or a small mountain when you're a child and get to the top. It was hard. It was tiring. And not everybody can do it, but you did it. And it's that satisfaction in the faces of kids who've lived through some discomfort that makes them feel stronger. And may I say, as a psychologist, less anxious.
Both of you, you, Doctor, in your book, and you, Dave, in some notes that you gave me about things you wanted to talk about independence and personal achievement and the importance of that and how that happens in this camping environment.
Absolutely. The kids will, as far as independence goes, sometimes it's making daily choices. It's setting some goals on the first night. And then for some of them, they may have never talked about some personal goals or things they wanted to accomplish in a week in this kind of setting. And it's seeing the end of the week and what they've done and what they might go home to do. So those are the things I think that are extremely important.
And you both mentioned the fact that these experiences build long-lasting relationships. What is it about being away from mom and dad, being in this environment with kids, peers like yourself, with slightly older mentors, in situations that are completely unlike what you're at home, that cause these friendships to be formed?
I think anytime you spend a week, 2-3 weeks with a group of, say, guys or gals in your cabin, there's a lot of, and I think it goes back to that magic of camp, that unconditional love, maybe some true friends that accept you for who you are. And that's where these folks become lifelong friends. I know from my experience, and I went to camp as a kid and obviously went into it full time, but those were some of my best friends for life just because they were accepting of me way back when and were lifelong friends ever since.
And I would think, Doctor, I only have 30 seconds here, that you're thrown into this situation in a week-long or two-week-long camping situation where you're with people that you don't necessarily like, but you have to get along with them.
You have to live with them, and you have to make your peace with them if they're in the cabin with you, and you have to build a community with them, and in a way you don't have to do at school.
We're talking about camp with Dave Purcell, executive director of YMCA's Camp Harrison, and Dr. Michael Thompson, a child psychologist and author of Homesick and Happy, How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. We're coming right back with more Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Historic Columbia, the Woodrow Wilson family home, South Carolina's only presidential site that explores the Reconstruction time period that helped shape a nation and a president. Tour times and info at historiccolumbia.org. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, the push to mandate vaccines for school children. California passes a new law requiring all children enrolled in school to be vaccinated. It's the largest state in the nation to do so. Diane Rehm and her panel of guests will talk about the push to require vaccinations and the tension between public health and personal beliefs. That's The Diane Rehm Show coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock right after Charlotte Talks. Here on 90.7 WFAE.
The Charlotte Symphony's Summer Pops finale celebrates American independence with patriotic favorites, plus a 50s medley and music from Michael Jackson. Fireworks follow the concert at Symphony Park on Friday evening, July 3rd. Details at charlottesymphony.org. WFAE is pleased to be a media partner.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about summer camp and the camping experience and how you get kids ready and how kids survive, how parents survive with Dr. Michael Thompson, child psychologist and author of many books, but the latest of which is about our topic today, Homesick and Happy, How Time Away from Parents Can Help a Child Grow. And Dave Purcell is also with us, executive director of the YMCA Camp Harrison near Wilkesboro. Grace emails, I take issue with all the comments about how when we were little, we could bike and walk wherever we wanted. The town in which we live is not set up for pedestrians. There were more cars, less sidewalks. I don't think the fact that children these days are less able to get to places by themselves is indicative of helicopter parenting, but of a changing car-driven world. You think that's true? It's not true of me. That's not true of me. We didn't have any sidewalks in our neighborhood. So if you walked or biked or roller skated, you did it in the street with cars.
That's what I did.
That's what I did too.
Michelle on Facebook says, can Dr. Thompson tell us the ideal age a child should start sleepaway camp? Is there a way to know if your child is ready?
Yeah, there is. And Dave referred to it earlier. It's the temperament of the child. There are some bolder kind of kids who are right out the door. My daughter always wanted to do sleepovers, and she wanted to stay a second night. She was just she was kind of a bolder kid. I had a son who was a great deal more anxious and cautious, and he didn't go to camp until quite a bit later. So the range is actually from 6 to 12.
If your son, if your son hadn't wanted to go to camp, would you have made him go?
I did, actually.
Okay.
I said when he was 13, I said, son, you know, this is an experience I want for you. And he was a little anxious, and my wife, who'd never been to camp, was quite anxious. And I said, no, this is something I want you to try. And he went to a camp where I'd been the consultant. I took him up to visit. We spent 2 days there the summer before he went. And he said, okay, Dad, I'll do it. And then he went back a second year. He went for a month each time. At the end of the second year, he said, Dad, he said, I get the camp thing, but this is not my kind of camp. I said, really, it was a canoeing camp. But that's what I had loved. And he said, find me an arts camp. I said, great. So he did 4 more years, became a counselor. My son now teaches woodworking at a summer camp as a counselor, and he's also in art school. Arts camp, and I wrote about arts camp in one of the chapters, it doesn't have to be a sports camp. There are camps for every kid. The important thing is, again, away from your parents, living in community, and some rules and values that go to the heart of your character. I think camp is often more character building than school.
But 6 to 12 is when you are – you were just
somewhere in there, depending on the temperament of the child and whether their friends are going. But look, hey, you're in North Carolina. It's one of the great camp states in the United States. I spent some time in the Green River Valley. You've got some amazing camps up there.
And you're nodding in agreement.
Absolutely. And I was going to say, I think the sign of any good camp director is when he or she says, you know, maybe this isn't the camp for you, your particular camp, but there's so many great camps in this area if you live in the Charlotte region. There's a camp for any type of child, creative, sports-minded, just standard traditional camp, whatever the case may be.
You went to camp, Doctor, as you just said, as a child, but in the course of writing this book, you visited 19 summer camps.
Oh, yes. I've eaten a lot of grilled cheese sandwiches and fudgicles, I'll tell you that.
You interviewed 17 camp directors, talked with hundreds of counselors and hundreds of campers. Given that you went to camp, what did you want to know? What did you learn from all of that? And did you get similar answers from all those different individuals? Did something common emerge from all these conversations?
Yes. And I think the two most important things that in camp is the relationship between kids and young adults. We live in such an age-segregated society. And 15-year-olds are not easy. They're not easy for adults. They're not easy for 45-year-olds. But there's something magic that happens between 22-year-olds and 15-year-olds when the 22-year-olds really take an interest in them. The 15-year-olds suddenly see a path to adulthood. They say, oh, I see it. I mean, oh, this is what it means to be a college student. This is what it means to be a responsible college student. I see it. I see the road. I think the other thing is identity. When kids make choices, and almost all camps have choices. I mean, if you go to an arts camp, you get to choose whether you do batik or woodworking or whether you're on stage or dance. And when your child away from your parents, you get to choose. So I sent my daughter Joanna off to a camp in Vermont, general camp. But I paid a premium because she'd been between the ages of 8 and 12, very interested in horseback riding. I wasn't all that interested in it. I found it quite expensive. But she wanted to do it. So I sent her off, paid an extra premium for her to do horseback riding. She came back at the end of the month. I said, how was camp? Good, Dad, good. How was horseback riding? I didn't do it. I said, well, I paid extra money. She said, I didn't like the counselor, Dad. I said, what'd you do? She said, I loved the sailing instructor. I spent all of my days sailing. So I sent off a horseback rider and got back a sailor. And a little money that wasn't used. But my daughter to this day, she's 27, just made me a grandfather, and she'll say she's the best sailor in the family. Well, she is, because she went off, chose it herself, worked at it, and came back that way. That's identity development.
Yeah, many of these kids evidently end up idolizing these counselors that they that shepherd them through this experience, and they're only a few years older than the kids themselves. And you get into in the book, you start talking about things I never thought I would read about in this book. But the idea of sex, the idea of sexual identity, the idea that these kids sometimes get crushes on their counselors, see them as adult heroes. You've recognized this. I can see it in your eyes, Dave.
Sure.
So how do you handle that?
Well, I think you have to coach the staff on a good envelope of safety and following the guidelines that we've set before them in terms of appropriate and inappropriate. I know at our camp, typical questions about where do babies come from and things of that nature, we refer them back to the parents just because we don't feel like that's the place of the camp to get into those issues. But if a camper is getting a little too close to a staff member, the staff member is coached, of course, to help them through that in terms of there's appropriate and inappropriate and this is not something that we want to encourage.
You also,
but I give a story, Mike, in the book about a cranky or by self-described cranky, entitled, overweight boy from New York who went to a camp and looking at his counselor's muscular bodies made him want to pull himself together. And so that admiration, that role modeling, I want to do what the big guys can do. Mm-hmm. I want to look like the big guys. We can't don't underestimate the power of that. Yeah. I mean, it makes everybody a little nervous to talk about the love between 11-year-olds and 9-year-olds because it isn't because everybody's so afraid of child sexual abuse. I get that. Camp directors get that. Everybody gets that. But let's look at the good part, which is that kids get to see big kids and they get to feel their interest in them. Where else in America will a 19-year-old spend a sustained amount of time with an 11-year-old and be interested in their development? Hmm. Camp's the only place.
You also write how kids become comfortable at camp in their own skins, their own naked skin. Two different topics, but talk about that for a second.
Well, I interviewed five 34-year-old mothers who'd been at camp together since they were eight, and then they became counselors in training together and counselors together. So I had dinner I had a riotous dinner and a little too much wine. But these women, I said, why are you all so close? And they said, we've seen each other naked a lot. And very matter of fact, you know, I see kids at my school, and I teach sex education to eighth grade boys at a boys' school outside Boston. I see kids who have these kind of super protective parents, and then all of a sudden they're seeing pornography on the internet in third grade, fourth grade, and nothing in between. And kids are curious about bodies, and they're curious about sexuality. In camp, you go and you live in a cabin, and kids are changing their clothes, and you're going swimming, and it is, a healthy transition to understanding about other people's bodies. Now, 14-year-old boys in camp give each other staggering amount of misinformation about sex. But that's part of growing up, too, and you don't die from it. I just think there's a kind of a healthy relationship with the body out in nature and in camp. And that means, you know, sometimes you're going to the bathroom in the woods, and some kids are freaked out by that. And kids talk about it, but they're with each other's bodily discomfort and caring for each other and feeling for each other. And it is a different level of acceptance and humanity than you get in school.
Yeah. Let's talk about something else here, which is also similar in terms of caring for each other and also just being comfortable in your own skin and what happens sometimes with young people. They wet their beds. Mm-hmm. Does that happen a lot in camp?
It happens sometimes, yeah.
How do you deal with that? Because he writes about it in his book. It's pretty...
Well, I know how we deal with the, first of all, that it's not brought up in front of the whole cabin. Mm-hmm. If the counselor sees that a young man or lady is wet their bed in the morning, they'll let the kids go on to activities, and they'll quietly change the bed, and the nurses will wash the sheets, and everything will be back to normal when they get back to the cabin. If the other campers do find out about it, of course, you know, talking about not making fun of each other, that accidents happen and things of this nature. So,
that's what I mean by children's acceptance of each other. I think it's a great relief to children who have some body anxieties to realize that all other children
have the same anxieties.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's take some phone calls here before we run out of time. Greg in Gastonia, welcome. You're on WFAE.
Hi, this is Greg Montgomery speaking, and thank you for the program this morning. And I wanted to call in. I'm on the board of advisors at Camp Thunderbird, which is a sister camp to Camp Harrison, so good to hear Dave talking about his experience up there. And indeed, the 1 to 2 weeks that a child spends at camp can be very much liberating, life-changing, and they come away transformed and different and have different goals and aspirations for life. And there's a lot of kids out there who, frankly, you know, can't have that experience because, particularly in today's economic times, maybe resident camp like this isn't affordable. And I just wanted to bring to your listeners' attention a program we have at Camp Thunderbird called the Send a Kid to Camp campaign, where since 1936 we've offered over 30,000 full and partial scholarships to children who would like to have a camp experience but their parents can't afford it. And it's a great opportunity for children to get out of an environment into an environment where they can thrive and learn success, gain friends, learn see a bigger path, greater path for their life, and have that transformative experience. So I think this program is great to discuss these issues and just wanted to make the community at large aware of this program.
And very quickly, how do they find out about this?
Go to our website at campthunderbird.org, and you can learn about the Send a Kid to campaign for both applying to get a scholarship and also to make donations.
Okay. Greg, thank you for your call. Dave, you want to add to that?
Oh, I was just going to say we do the same thing as well. We're both connected through the YM Greater Charlotte. Okay. Yeah, that's great.
Thanks for your call. Debbie in Charlotte, welcome.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say that I went to one of those Northeastern camps for 2 months at a time, 2,000 miles away from my house, and it was not the unconditional love experience that you're describing, I had a very, very difficult time, and I went for 6 years. However, having said that, I learned so much in that experience about compassion for other people, what it felt like to be picked on, and also that I could live through it, that I would be okay. And so when I got to high school, it was so much easier for me because I had gone through that experience in camp. So while I didn't go on to be a camp counselor, I don't have lifelong friends, I still am grateful for that experience. Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Debbie. Cameron has an email here that kind of tags onto that. I adopted a line from another parent, he says. It's especially helpful for a nervous child. Go, have a great time and lots of adventures, and then come home and tell me about it. This seems to work for my 14-year-old going for weeks and my 11 and 8-year-olds on overnights. Hope that might help other parents. Jennifer in Boone, welcome.
Hi, thank you. I was calling because I am a parent of two young boys now and starting to think about whether...
How old are the boys, Jennifer? How old are the boys?
Well, they're a little too young right now. The oldest is 5. My other is...
Uh-huh.
And I'm calling because I went to camp and have mostly positive experiences from it. And I also was a camp counselor one summer when I was in college. And I have to say, the camp counselors, we would go out every other night. Half the counselors would go out one night. Half the counselors would go out next. We would stay out very, very late. We would drink. We would be tired and
we have less than a minute.
In some cases, less, the next day.
Less than a minute, Jennifer. So you have a question or a comment?
I'm sorry. I do have a question.
Okay.
So my concern is that that kind of thing happens at camps a lot, and I'm wondering how I can differentiate between camps.
Counselor behavior. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think that's probably one of the changes I was referring to in the beginning. Absolutely not. The staff stay in the cabins with the kids. They have to check in early in the evening. They're some of the staff do have a night off.